This morning, we're going to talk about the Floor Covering Educational Foundation. We have with us the executive director of that organization, Jim Aaron, and Don Roberts. He's the president and CEO of Central Alabama Flooring. He is the retail representative. He's also the board chairman of this organization. Gentlemen, it's great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Dan.
Now, Jim, you have just been named the executive director of this. Congratulations on
that. Thank you.
And I guess you've got some heavy-duty work ahead of you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. This is a big task, and but I feel comfortable. I feel very comfortable with the work we have ahead of us. We've got a strong board, we've got a lot of support, and we've got a lot of work to do.
Now, you've been in this industry an awfully long time. That ought to give you a good head start on this whole organization.
Well, you would like to think so, and I hope so, yes. 35 years, everything from starting out at retail at my uncle's flooring store back in West Columbia, South Carolina many years ago, to distribution, manufacturing, and of course, spent 17 years at CCA.
Interesting. Don, bring us up to date in case somebody listening and watching us isn't familiar with this organization, the Floor Covering Education Foundation. Give us a quick overview of that, if you would.
Sure. Well, it's been a year ago this past November that we actually formed the organization. And it came from some of the board meetings that we had while I was on the WFCA board. Well, I'm still on there, but a lot of the retailers that were on the board had been having the same discussion that we've had for years about the shortage of installers and the problems that they were having. And, you know, with our board, we also have manufacturers reps, you know, for some of the different industries on there. And it seemed that it was finally getting to the point where it was really affecting the sales for manufacturers as well as distributors. And, you know, we decided that being on the WFCA, we had some money that we were willing to put forward and kind of challenge the industry to step up to solve this problem. And so back then, Deb DeGraff, who's the current chairman of the board of the WFCA, myself, Dean Howell, and Scott Humphreys had went around and talked to the different manufacturers and got some feedback, got some input from them, and if they were willing to step up on this thing. And that's how the board was found at the time and the foundation was found. And it is to really solve this industry issue. Industry problem, industry solution is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And
so the $1 million is really a challenge. How did that, I mean, here we are a year and a half almost later. Has that challenge worked?
The challenge worked, yeah. We've got people stepping up. We've, you know, our initial three were Shaw, Mohawk, and Engineered Floors. They have all come to the table, and we are in the process right now, and Jim can explain it, but with Jim just coming on about 3 weeks ago, we are in the process of putting our plan together to take back to the board and then take to our partners that are helping us with this.
I've got you. Mm-hmm. Now, as I understand it too, Jim, the organization is not a training organization. It's a scholarship organization more.
Exactly. We won't be doing any training. No, I'm not doing any training. Don?
I'm not training.
He's not training either. No, we're not going to be doing any training. I would say in a lot of ways we're going to be the conduit. Look, a lot of what we're going to have to do is recruitment, right? We've got to feed the funnel of available installers into this industry. And that hasn't been really done effectively in the past. So part of it's going to be recruitment. And then scholarshiping these folks that decide to make this a career path into training, whether it be wood training, tile training, carpet training. And we're going to be working with approved, accredited training organizations to connect those people that are coming into the industry with those training organizations and scholarshiping that training and then helping with placement with retailers.
So would it be fair to say the organization, and Jim, you probably spend more time recruiting and fundraising. Is that pretty much, you know, focus on the two main functions?
I would say there's several different focuses. Naturally, recruiting is going to be a part of it. Now, we're working right now currently with an RFP to several different marketing agencies, and we hope to be able to select a marketing agency that will be working with us within the next 6 weeks, I believe. Is that right, Don?
Yeah.
And so, look, they're going to help us with this. We're going to use social media. We're going to work with high school guidance counselors. We've got a lot of avenues in the recruitment side. But yeah, fundraising is going to be a part of it as well. Now, I don't want to spend every day fundraising, right? So what we're going to be working towards is establishing maybe a set plan. Look, there's several different organizations out there, charitable organizations. And at the end of the day, we will be a charitable organization, right? We'll be a foundation that offers scholarships. So what we'd like to do is establish a way that that fundraising is automatic. And so it just comes in regularly. Again, to Don's point, industry problem, industry solution. So Don mentioned several suppliers just a moment ago, but part of what I'm going to be doing, and suppliers that are watching this interview, you should expect a phone call from me very shortly. Yeah, so that's going to be part of it for sure. And then, of course, recruitment. You know, the training organizations are going to be helping us a lot with recruitment and also placement. I was talking with Bart from the National Tile Council yesterday, and he said, listen, I've got all sorts of contacts. As soon as these guys get through training, I know exactly where to place them.
I guess in terms of writing checks for something like this, it's always better to have a programmed approach than it is to have to go back and start from square one every year.
It's true.
Yeah, well, true. One of our challenges is, you know, at the end of the day, the consumer needs to be the one funding this. Yeah. You're right. I don't want to have to go collect 10,000 checks a year to make this thing happen. That's not going to happen our first year or so. It's just not, you know, there's a lot of things that have got to be worked out. But we're also behind the eight ball a little bit on this trade thing, right? I mean, when people talk top of mind when it comes to trades, I mean, you know, electrical contractors, carpenters, plumbers, maybe concrete guys are the ones that they spit out. Nobody's, you know, oh yeah, flooring, yeah, that's, you know, it doesn't happen. And there's also a lot of people out there recruiting. I mean, plumbers are short people, carpenters are short people, electricians are short people, everybody is. You know, truck drivers, my gosh, it's crazy all these shortages that we have, and yet we've got an unemployment in this country. But we've got a lot of challenges just to educate people that we are a trade, by the way, a trade that a lot of people have made very good money and livings for their families. You know, I keep telling people, my generation is the one that kind of told kids they had to go to college when they, frankly, half of them shouldn't have. They should have gone into the trades. You know, the trade that we grew up in was a good trade. And
I'm wondering, and I can remember interviewing somebody, this was several years ago, from Georgia, who was on the State Board of Education. He told me that guidance counselors, nobody was pointing people towards trades. That has since changed. But I'm wondering the help that this trade and every trade could get from education professionals, just to make them aware that there is such a thing as trade, and then let them choose from that. Is there some activity, or is that a good place to concentrate?
No question it is. I mean, to your point, I believe there is a lot of movement toward encouraging people to pursue a trade. Listen, we've all seen what's happened on the news with college loans and student debt. And to Don's point, listen, college is not for everybody. And, you know, trades are good. It's good work. And you know what? There's a lot of good money to be made in trades. And so to your point, while a lot of high school guidance counselors or even parents, you know, sometimes the parents have a lot of influence on whether or not they're pushing kids to go to college or not. To Don's point, they do talk about, you know, maybe carpentry. They talk about, you know, being an electrician or plumber. Yeah. We have to create awareness that this is an opportunity. Right now, it's not even in the consideration set for so many young people. And by the way, not just young people. What about middle-aged, underemployed people? People that want a better career, want to make a better living, that see this as a viable opportunity. And it is.
When I was in school 150 years ago, many people learned a trade while in school and worked their way through college.
Doing the trade.
Did this afterwards. And I think that would be an interesting approach for several to take now. I don't see why they couldn't. Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah, well, that's one of the things, again, just a couple of weeks into the role, but we're already looking at opportunities to add flooring as a course in trade or technical schools while kids are still in high school.
Yeah, they're hungry for that right now. I mean, they need a curriculum, and they need, you know, this isn't like a math teacher, right? You know, they need somebody that can go in there and physically show people how to do this type of work. So we do have some challenges there, but the technical schools are definitely open to this now, because of the demand that there is in all the trades right now.
I had interviewed Robert Varden probably a year ago now, I guess, because I was holding a mic.
And Robert's on our board, by the way.
Is he?
Yeah, he
well,
is.
He had told me about some of the events that were, you know, he was involved in to recruit high school kids.
Yep.
And he told me that there's no shop anymore, evidently, in school. And kids had never had the experience of creating something with their hands. And they were able to do that at this event, and it really turned a lot of these kids on.
It was called Build My Future.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah, and then they did a Build My Future flooring edition as well. And the one thing that I got out of it, because we saw the videos and everything about it, people were drawn to the flooring part of it. It was more creative than running wire through a wall and stuff.
Right.
They got the layout flooring and make designs with tile, and it was pretty neat.
So the Build My Future flooring event happened just before COVID wrecked everything.
Yes.
So, you know, there's been a big pause in that, but we see that coming back around. We see that's an excellent opportunity to reach that age group.
Let me ask you again about recruiting, and anybody can pick up this, or both of you. How many, and I don't know that there's a number written someplace, but there must be a goal that we need X number of candidates for this school over some period of time. Talk about that, either one of you.
Well, if you take a look at the often quoted Blackstone report that was put together, I believe it said that the industry is losing 5,000 to 6,000 installers per year. And that's a net number. And each year the situation gets any worse. So if we were just to replace the ones that are leaving, we're talking 5,000 to 6,000 per year. Now that's a huge number. And you start thinking, well, how are those gonna be trained? Well, again, you talk about the challenges, that's another challenge. We have to study and understand the capacity of our training partners, and also get to a point where we're pushing that capacity and reach even further. And you know, and it's also taking it local, taking some of these trainings local, not just saying, well, listen, the NWFA has their training locations, main one in St. Louis, but we don't want to ask everybody to fly into St. Louis, 5,000 people a year for hardwood training. We want to take it to them as well. So look, anything's going to help, but if we're going to make a difference, we're talking big numbers. It's a big task.
Yeah.
Do you want to address that?
The number that we've been throwing around is about 10,000 total that we're going to need a year. And you know, when you break it down, I mean, it's a hefty task.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, again, I think we've got one thing we've got going for us now is our whole industry is behind this. It isn't the manufacturers looking at the retailers saying, you know, this is your problem to solve anymore. They're all on board, and it's great. Distributors as well. Jim's big challenge is going to be, you know, and we were just talking about this earlier in an earlier meeting, is really whittling it down to some things that we can replicate and get some short-term wins that we know we can take this thing, cookie-cutter it, and move it on so that the rest of the industry looks at it and says, okay, what we're doing is viable, what we're doing is going to work, and we need to be even more behind this thing. So
we're really at the front end of this now. I mean,
very much
he's
so.
3 weeks into it, yeah. He's still, the bucket's been dumped over his head and he's drinking through a fire hose right now because everybody and their brother has an idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So by the end of the month, we ought to have a plan together.
At least 10,000.
It'll be solved.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's going to take a while. And to John's point, we had a meeting with one of the industry executives earlier today, and his advice to me was, you know, short term, you're going to need a lot of ideas. But then it's going to be your decision and your job to figure out which one of these ideas you're going to test. And then maybe we test several different things, but find the thing that works and scale it and multiply it and duplicate it. Because again, training is local. We've got to take it local because again, there's not a part, I was about to say America, there's a part, not a part of North America that's not affected by this. All the US and Canada completely affected, every corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today you can't go wire a house. If you just say, hey, I got a bunch of wire, and you go over to the builder and you say, hey, I'll wire this house for you, yeah. You know, you got to have some credentials. Our industry never did that, you know, so we're behind the eight ball in some of that. Plus, we're not, you know, as far as pay goes to our installers, you know, we're behind the eight ball on that as well. But there's got to be a path that says, hey, you learn this, earn this accreditation, you earn this skill set. There's got to be that path also for them to want to grow and to learn these things as well. If not, we're just going to be still the archaic way we've done it for years.
And that's part of the organization, is to set those standards and to have industry-wide certification of some type.
Well, that's been another challenge that we had. Even before Jim came on, you know, getting all of the training organizations together and just try to get people to agree upon what does the minimum acceptable standard to get into this mean? We couldn't even get there, but I think we're getting there now, and I think we're going to be able to solve that problem, which will open up the doorway for a lot of different things to happen.
So what exists now in terms of certification? I mean, I know the CFI has certification, other organizations. How would you describe the situation as it exists today?
Well, currently, if you take a look at when it comes to tile, of course, the CTEF, a part of the NTCA, of course, they offer certification. Very stringent, very detailed. It's a long process. NWFA, the National Wood Flooring Association, they offer certification as well. But again, it's a very rigorous process. Take the NWFA. They've got an introductory class. They've got an intermediate class. And they've got, you know, an advanced class. And then just because you take the classes doesn't mean you're certified. You actually go through a full day of testing to actually get certified. Not everybody passes it. And listen, it's not like you can take beginner, intermediate, and advanced all in 1 month. There's a process. There's a number of years. But we've got to make sure that we're working with people that are accredited. And again, you look at the NWFA, the CTEF, CFI. You know, you mentioned the word certification. We want to make sure that means something, right? We first of all need bodies short term, right? Yeah. Even if they're helpers, we need those guys. The end goal is certification, certainly. But I think we've also, in the process, we've got to really put some meat behind what certification means. Yeah. I think there's been some efforts in the past, or some things that have been done that have cheapened the word certification, and we've got to get a handle on that.
That's interesting. I was thinking as you were saying this, recruiting candidates. Mm-hmm. Now, you were mentioning, I think, the idea of middle-aged people unhappy with their present career. I think that's a great idea, but I expect that the concentration there is going to be somewhere 18 to 30-year-olds or somewhere 25-year-olds. And it seems like they certainly march to a different drummer than this industry is used to. Yeah. And I mean, and that's a pretty much a major shift, I would think. To talk about that, and just like for example, going to a trade school, as I understand it, normally ends up with a job, mm-hmm. you know, where you get a paycheck and you get fringe benefits, et cetera. I think boomers weren't interested. They went, hey, I want to go work for myself. And I think probably 18 to 30-year-olds would ultimately like to do that, but they don't want to start out doing that.
Yeah.
So it seems like, I guess, in a way, that's going to have to change the industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a retailer doesn't want a contractor, they want an employee, that's a different ballgame. Is this a problem?
You know, I'm going to let Don address that, because I know he has subcontractors and he has employee installers. He's the best one to answer that.
So on the employee side, you're right. First of all, we're recruiting probably from sophomore year of high school. I think that's where it's got to start, mm-hmm. sophomore. Because if you're recruiting the seniors, they've already made up their mind. I think most people apply for colleges in their junior year.
Yeah.
And you've got to somehow affect them before that, right? So I think that'll be a lot of what we do with the marketing company. But you're right, they've got to come out and get placed. You know, a couple of things that we've looked at with trade schools, with even community colleges, right, is that, you know, if somebody would, if they're going to be a subcontractor and they want to start their own business, that if you're teaching this in the community college, you can also tie that in with a two-year business degree at the same time. And they win-win. You know, they learn a trade, and then they learn the money part of the trade, because that's always a big problem for people. I mean, you know, I don't care if you're a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever you are. You know, you go to learn a skill set, and you come out and you're a doctor, and you're a great neurosurgeon, but you go bankrupt because you didn't manage the money that you had. Well, we got that same problem in our industry with subcontractors. And it's always been a big problem. In fact, that's why part of the gray area has been out there, where the IRS wants them to be considered employees, because a lot of times they have problems with their taxes. Mm-hmm. I think the people coming out today, as the baby boomers wanted their own businesses, I think a lot of them want to work for somebody, they want to have benefits, they want to have paid vacation time, and they want to have the things that a business allows. That is a difference. That is a different direction than our industry standard is. But I'll tell you, for me, I've got a third of my installers that are employees, and it's great. I mean, it really is, because I can make decisions in my business based on my employees rather than having to beg or plead or ask somebody as a subcontractor, because they can do what they want because they're a subcontractor. Yeah. You know, it was different 20 years ago when we had unlimited subcontractors. We don't have that today.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about the board. It looks like your board is a who's who in this industry. I suspect that gives you a good leg up in getting this thing off the ground.
No, look, I will tell you, that's one of the greatest things about this organization. And honestly, it was one of the things that really drew me to this opportunity. When you take a look at the commitments that have already been made by the largest suppliers in the industry and commitments yet to be made, along with the power of the board, you're right. It's a who's who of this industry. And we're well represented between distribution, manufacturing, retailing. And you know what? I knew that I was going to have the access to all of those people and the help from all of those people. So, yeah, I'm excited.
And we challenged them, too. I mean, you know, we were really upfront with our board. A couple weeks ago, we had a board call, and I sent an email out there. We need an active board. And when I say active board, it's not we need everybody just throwing ideas at us, because that is an active board. And I need an active board from the standpoint of Jim is one of two employees for the Floor Covering Education Foundation right now. I'll tell you, he's probably a little overwhelmed, probably to say the least.
Just a little bit.
But we've got access to information, right? And so the information's got to come, Jim reaching out to them saying, here's what I need from you. Here's the help I need. Here's the opinion I need from you. Give me some feedback, as opposed to a board that just is going to, you know, dump stuff over his head and here, run in this direction, run in that direction. And I think we've got that right now. I think we've got a lot of people that are more than willing to help with this thing. And then very smart people that have been around for a long time, and they know the difficulty here.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is one, it seems to me, I mean, I've been in this industry 40 years, and I can remember the first, one of the first major meetings I went to, this was discussed, and a really important player, that we don't have enough installers to install the carpet that we're making. And here we are 40 years later saying the same thing. So I guess everybody sees what you're saying is being correct.
Yeah, you know, the old saying is everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it, right? I think it's a little bit different in the flooring industry. I think what has happened here is that everybody's tried to do it in their own silo, right? And
Yes. What
I see, what I think is really cool about this foundation is I see it as being the unifying voice, the unifying conduit between the training organizations, but you know, and the retailers and the manufacturers. And once we get a partner with our marketing firm, partnering with those guys to actually help with the recruitment. I see this as being a really sea change in this effort.
Well, we're an industry also, right? That we never wanted to do something that could possibly help our competitors. I mean, we're that monkey that puts his hand in the jar and he won't let go of, you know, three of the things, and we starve to death, right? It's been a big issue. My philosophy has always been help my competition be better. So for me, like as a retailer, so that everything doesn't become about who can drop the price the lowest to sell it, right? I'd rather have good competitors in my marketplace and all of us making decent margin and everything else than to have somebody just skimming off, just drop by drop in price. The same thing goes with installers, right? We're at a point right now that the only way we can grow is to steal from each other. Is to go after each other's installers. Well, wouldn't you rather have another 1,000 or 2,000 installers out there in a pool that we all still have to fight for? You know, just like employees and everything else. People have to want to work for your company, and you've got to have a defining moment or some things that make you stand out over your competition in all other aspects. Well, why wouldn't we do the same thing on the install side? But I would much rather have a pool to go after than to have to come, you know, sit in the bushes at your retail store in the morning and see who's loading out, you know. That was yesterday, but.
And tomorrow.
Well, it could be, yeah.
Now, as an outside observer to this whole thing, if somebody were to say, what's the one problem, what's the one situation that has caused this problem all these years? I would say it was pay. I mean, it seems like installers' income hasn't changed all that much in probably the 40 years I've been in this industry. People out there, as you had referred to earlier, that have done extremely well, you know, mm-hmm. that are probably good business people. What happens in terms of pay? Do you see that changing going forward?
Well, I do. And again, I'm not a retailer. I'll let Don weigh on that because, look, as a retailer, it's going to affect him more than will anyone else, all retailers, right? But I think certainly pay has got to be addressed. I mean, you take a look at what installers were making 30 years ago and look at what they're making today and adjust it for inflation, and they're going backwards.
Yeah.
They're going backwards. And you know what? In my opinion, it's a pass-through cost. If everybody were to go up, it's a pass-through cost to the consumer. And I think we have to do that. I think we're beyond the point of saying, should we, can we? I think we have to. I think it has to be addressed.
Hey, we've had years where we got 5 to 6 increases on carpet prices, right? But we couldn't give the installer a nickel, you know, because that was going to put us out of business, right? I mean,
you know, it seems to me, marketing, and mm-hmm. obviously that's one of your specialties, service, making sure that when somebody buys floor covering, they're proud of it mm-hmm. after it's, you know, it's all said and done. I mean, that seems to be where the rubber meets the road in the floor covering industry.
Yeah.
I mean, and marketing quality installation would seem to be a major asset.
You touch on so many things right there. Listen, it's often the flooring installer, which is the last contact with the consumer from that retail store. So, and oftentimes, he or she is the one that leaves the most lasting final impression with that consumer.
Yep.
So that's very, very important. I mean, their role is critically important. You know, you talk about the pay, and I'm gonna circle back around to certification. What if one day we get to a point where, again, there's real teeth in certification? And by the way, when I say there's real teeth in certification, CFI does a great job with their carpet certification. The NWFA does a great job with their wood certification. We've got great companies that do certification, right? What if we can get to a point one day where maybe there's a extra pay level, maybe there's a more liberal claims policy for certified installers and those things? Maybe we elevate the role. And so I think that's, again, a consideration set that we need to be thinking about.
But that is happening today, though, too. I mean, right? I mean, as we are shorted on installers, they are benefiting from that because now they can, you know, negotiate their services or whatever. But you've got certain products out there, certain manufacturers that have for years been doing it. You know, Forbo's one of them. You have to use their certified installer or your warranty. Everything's void mm-hmm. if you don't, you know, on the commercial side, which, you know, makes sense because they've got a unique product that, you know, that needs to do that. It's the commodity products that have never really done that. Mm-hmm. So this is
more than recruiting and training installers. There's a whole lot more involved in this story, it sounds to me, than that. You're going to be a busy guy.
Yeah, yeah. And right now the foundation has two employees. myself and Kay Whitener. Thank God for Kay. She's been great so far in my first 3 weeks. But yeah, there's a lot of work to do. And you know, to the point that was made earlier, it's a matter of prioritization. You know, what is going to be, what do we need to focus on first? And that is going to be difficult because we need to focus on a lot at one time. Because again, we're working with a marketing company. We'll have that finalized within the next 30, 45 days. But at the same time, we need to be talking to the trade schools, to the guidance counselors. We're working already with the companies that are going to be doing the certification. So a lot of work to do, but we've got to be very deliberate about what we do.
And this is going to be something that, you know, regionally, there's going to be a lot of people needed to be involved in this. I mean, it's, you know, we're here in Dalton, Georgia right now. Jim's up in St. Louis, you know, but we're going to need people in California, Texas. I mean, this is going to have to be a regional thing, and it's going to go all the way down to the local, you know, local neighborhoods. We need night schools with these things. There's going to be people, like I said, that are full-time installers working a job during the day, but maybe they need to go, you know, they need to recertify themselves, or they need to learn a new skill set that, you know, we have to bring it into a local market and do it at night for a week or whatever. But that'll, you know, at least bring our current crews up to a level where maybe they can install an extra 10-15%, you know, than they're doing now, and get paid that way.
Or without claims, or with, well, fewer claims.
Yeah. That's a huge thing. I mean, you know, you look at manufacturing today, they're going to be probably one of the biggest beneficiaries of this, because claims today for product, most of it's installation issues one way or another. Now, is it still their fault in some cases? Absolutely, because you bring me the seventh generation Click product, and you put it in my showroom, and you don't train anybody on what's different about this one than the one that was here 2 years ago, and my guys go all out and they beat it in with a hammer like they always did, and we got a problem, right? So there is a lot of that that's going to happen, but we need to fix that.
Right.
You know,
maybe the big thing here is an attitude change industry wide, and that's maybe the precursor of everything.
In the past, we never had time to do it right the first time, but we always had time to go back and do the repair or the replacement, right?
Yeah. I was on the website, and this maybe ties into what you're talking about, the need for training in various places. I had seen something about tractor trailers. Big trucks that would be,
there is a rumor,
scattered out around the country for training, I guess.
Well, one of
the
things,
one of the
things that we've looked at is there are communities where we don't have a distributor, you know, accessible, right? Like most of my businesses, I'm in Central Alabama. So the city of Birmingham, there's distributors there that I can engage with that will let us use their facilities for training and stuff like that. But to go in some of the smaller communities, and where people are working, and so we thought about these mobile classrooms, right? Which is a 53-foot tractor trailer that the sides pop out on, and we can go position those into those communities and then do training through different organizations. You know, we would have the trailers and all that type of stuff, but we wouldn't be the ones doing the training.
Yeah. I gotcha. Well, it seems like, Jim, you've got your hands full here.
Yeah, I do.
You know what you were signing on for.
You know, I knew exactly what I was signing on for, and I'm excited about it. It's a big risk, but look, I think the time is right. And again, I see people coming together. I see a strong board. I see suppliers that are committed. Look, in the short time that I've been gone from CCA, the number of retailers that have reached out to me and said, hooray for you, congratulations, and how can I help? You know, what you're doing is the right thing. You have our support. And so, look, I want to be the unifying voice, and I'm excited about it. I really am excited about it.
Well, and it's, you know, we were talking about 40 years, and that's only when I joined the fray. And God knows,
sure,
probably another 40 years before that. And I think that everybody seems to be pointed in the right direction. So good luck to you on this. It sounds like, you know, this is going to change the industry more than just about anything in recent memory.
That's what I'm banking on.
It's definitely not going to be for lack of effort, yeah. I'll tell you that.
Well, that's for sure. Well, thank you guys for talking with us. I appreciate it. Very interesting.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Jim Aaron. He's the new executive director of the Floor Covering Education Foundation, and Don Roberts, a floor covering retailer from Alabama. He is on the board. He's chairman of the board, as a matter of fact. He's president and CEO of Central Alabama Flooring. And this is Talk Floor TV.